Welcome to the July 17th dual platform service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. The service is led by Brenna Clampton and Worship Associate Earl Irwin. Telling our story can be a very powerful way to connect with others and to connect with ourselves. Questions and journaling exercises can both offer entry points into our story. When we bring our findings to share with another person who is an empathetic listener, we get to show up differently and move towards greater healing for everyone.
Good morning and welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the New River Valley on the native lands of the Tutelo and Monacan people, where we share a mission to inspire, create, and transform. I'm Earl Irwin, your worship associate today. I'm leading worship this morning with our guest speaker, Brenna Clampton. Brenna lives in Northern Virginia and is a member of Accotink UU Church. She currently works as an attorney and is attending Meadville Lombard Theological School. This fall, she'll begin a ministerial internship at UU Congregation of Rockville, Maryland. She has been attending SUSE since 2007. She will be leaving immediately after the service to drive to SUSE 2022. And we're glad she could stop over to speak to us on her way here. There. And our musician this morning, as you've already heard, is Brian Peters on the vibraphone. If you're with us for the first time, we're glad you found us. You'll find a link into the virtual visitor's card in the chat or a paper card in the back of the sanctuary. Please fill it out if you'd like us to stay in touch with you. Also, for those of you in the sanctuary, please remember to set your cell phones on the worship mode, also known as airplane. If you have a joy or sorrow you wish to have shared aloud, you'll find a link in the chat or cards that are available near the entrance to the sanctuary, and we'll collect those during the opening hymn. There are many opportunities to meet virtually or on the grounds throughout the week. You can look at the calendar on our website for times, locations, Zoom links, and contact information. And thanks to all our volunteers this morning and throughout the week who make these activities possible.
Good morning. It is great to be here. And this morning, we are greeting one another across space. So if you are joining us on Zoom, we are grateful you are here. Please greet your neighbors by writing in the chat where you are this morning. And as you do that, we'll be sharing the Zoom screen with the folks in the sanctuary so they can see your smiling faces. If you are comfortable, please turn on your video. I think this is now the time I get to hold this, correct? So we want everyone at home to see who is here in the sanctuary. So I asked to spotlight the pulpit camera so you all can see their smiling faces. Go ahead and wave to everyone on Zoom. You are right. I could very certainly make people seasick. All right, and welcome all.
Please join us in reading the words on your screen as we light the chalice. We light this chalice for the warmth of welcome, the light of hope, and the fire of service. Our opening words today are by Julianne Lepp. We seek our place in the world and the answers to our heart's deep questions. As we seek, may our hearts be open to unexpected answers. May the light of our chalice remind us, this is a community of warmth, of wisdom, and welcoming of multiple truths. Please join me in reading the words of our covenant. We covenant to create a place of respect and kindness and to build a spiritual community based on reason and courageous love. We will listen to one another respectfully, assume good intentions, use the power of our words with care, express gratitude, honor our differences, help one another, and welcome all. We will communicate directly, honestly, and compassionately. When we hurt one another, we will forgive, make amends, and reconnect. While we celebrate the words of our mission statement and of this covenant, we affirm that our mission lives through our actions.
So we're going to take some time for Time for All Ages this morning, and I'm going to invite George Lally to join me. George, you had another way you wanted me to introduce you. You are welcome to share that.
I told her to call me Don Jorge. But I don't think you knew how to say Jorge.
That was the issue, okay. Yes. So, and the reason we're doing this, let me do a brief introduction, then I'm going to open. I brought a book to share. It is a beautiful book. If anybody knows Neruda's work, this came out in late April. So Pablo Neruda was a Chilean poet who, among other things, was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1971. When he died in 1973, the Book of Questions was one of 8 unpublished manuscripts found on his desk. And it contains 316 questions. We are only reading a few of those. And for me, this book is about connections. I read in the back of the book, Paloma Valdivia, her grandmother, she's the illustrator, her grandmother was friends with Neruda's sister. I've also done this in a different congregation where the person joining me that day had actually been to Neruda's house as a teenager. So many, many rich connections. And I will be reading the questions in English, and then Don Jorge will follow in Spanish. So why do rocks have so many wrinkles and so many holes? You are welcome. Uh-oh. Do you want to read from here, or do you want to read from what you have?
I'm going to read from here.
Perfect. Yeah. There you go.
¿Y para qué tantas arrugas y tanto agujero en la roca?
Gracias. Does the earth chirp like a cricket in the symphony of the skies?
¿Canta la tierra como un grillo entre la música celeste?
Who shouted for joy the day when the color blue was born?
¿Quiénes gritaron de alegría cuando nació el color azul?
What irritates volcanoes so much that they spit fire, ice, and fury?
¿Qué cosa irrita a los volcanes que escupen fuego, frío y furia?
How many questions in a cat?
¿Cuántas preguntas tiene un gato?
When I look once more at the sea, does the sea see me or not see me?
Cuando veo de nuevo el mar me ha visto o no me ha visto?
Why do the waves ask me the same questions I ask them?
¿Por qué me preguntan las olas lo mismo que yo les pregunto?
Two more. Where can you find a bell that rings inside your dreams?
¿Dónde encontrar una campana que suena adentro de tus sueños?
Where does the stuff of dreams go? Does it pass into the dreams of others?
¿Dónde van las cosas del sueño? ¿Se van al sueño de los otros?
Where does the rainbow end? In your soul or on the horizon?
¿Dónde termina el arco iris? ¿En tu alma o en el horizonte? Can I just share with you that my sainted ex-wife, who is Argentine, and the Argentines and Chilenos have a big rivalry. Mm-hmm. She used to say with disparagingly, los Chilenos comen gato. They eat cats.
That's a whole nother epic question poetry. Thank you. Thank you, George.
Let us celebrate our ability to contribute to our community by collecting an offering. It is a practice of our congregation to share half of the offering with a local charity or UU-affiliated organization. This week's recipient is the Boxburg Interfaith Food Pantry, serving qualified residents of Blacksburg and McCoy. The pantry is a joint ministry of over 25 local denominations and is also supported by individuals, organizations, and clubs that are members of this community. Please give online using the link in the chat or through the many ways listed on the screen. You will be able to give after the service as well. For those of you in the sanctuary who would like to give cash or check, there's a basket in the back of the sanctuary. Thank you all for your generosity. As we collect our offering, we'll enjoy Brian Peters playing Misty, during which time you are invited to light candles of hope and remembrance. Please remember to maintain distance between yourself and others. For those online, you may write on the chat if you'd like to a candle lit, and those will be read aloud after the offertory. Please join me as we accept these offerings. We accept these offerings in support of our congregation and our larger community, recognizing always that in giving and receiving, we participate in a circle of care with no beginning and no end.
So at this moment, I would invite everybody to get comfortable in your seats, and we'll go into meditation. Sink in, deep breath. Today's meditation is borrowed from some words of a well-known hymn, Where Do We Come From? And as you take that first deep breath, I invite you to focus on the expansion of the belly and the question, where do you come from? without thinking about it too much, just images that might pop up. As you empty out the breath, I invite you to take another breath in, and this time see if you can get the breath to reach down to your toes. Feeling grounded in your feet. Whenever the next breath comes to you, I would invite you to think about the next question. Who are you? And again, expand that breath to wherever it wants to go. Maybe this time it goes out to your fingertips. For the last deep breath, fullest, most expansive breath that you are taking, where are you going? And again, images might pop up for you. Take one last cleansing breath.
Our reading today is Breakage by Mary Oliver. I go down to the edge of the sea. How everything shines in the morning light. The cusp of the whelk, the broken cupboard of the clam, the opened blue mussels, moon snails, pale pink and barnacle scarred, and nothing at all whole or shut, but tattered, split, dropped by the gulls onto the gray rocks and all the moisture gone. It's like a schoolhouse of little words, thousands of words. First, you figure out what each one means by itself. The jingle, the periwinkle, the scallop full of moonlight. Then you begin slowly to read the whole story.
I'm really grateful to be here this morning, and it's probably no surprise, but we're going to talk about stories. So I'll start off with a story. I was reflecting last night as we were coming into Blacksburg, the first time I ever came to Blacksburg in 2007. It's the first year my family attended Soucy, and I had three young children with me. And I think the theme that year was to live more fully. And if you can picture having three young children on a college campus that's so expansive, and there are other camps going on, right? So the football players and the basketball players and the 18-month-old in the dining hall at the same time. Am I pronouncing the dining hall correctly if I say Dietrich? Someone, yes, okay, I'm getting nods, thank you. So my kids had a habit that year, well, often they still do, running ahead of me. They're grown now, so I don't worry about this, but I remember running out of Dietrich and I couldn't see them. They were nowhere, but I heard them. I could hear their little voices. And I don't know if these trees are still there, but there were two or three trees right outside of Dietrich. And inside the trees, there was a space just right for kids to gather. And so they did. Every night of that week, we were at our first Soucy. That shifted our lives, that trip. That venture into trees And I pulled up this morning, I was thinking about Robin Wall Kimmerer, whose book, Braiding Sweetgrass, I love. So professor of forestry and ecology and just so much wisdom. And she writes, paying attention is a form of reciprocity with the living world, receiving the gifts with open eyes and open heart. We went home to Northern Virginia that summer, and in our yard, as there are with many yards in Northern Virginia, there's a Kwanzaa cherry tree. It's not the same as the cherry trees that we know so well in the tidal basin. And my kids started climbing that tree. And I was struck that up until that point, as is with many suburban landscapes, we often think of the trees as ornaments, things that are put there for our eyes only. So I spent the next few years, my kids climbing trees like crazy. I think one summer, my son and his friends even started hanging things from the limbs. I'm sure we were that house in the neighborhood. But you know, people coming up to me and just inquisitive looks and sometimes fear what happens if they fall. And for me, it was a shift of those were not there for my benefit, but I got to be in partnership with the trees. And it all started right outside of Dietrich. So in her book, Wounds into Wisdom, Rabbi Tirzah Firestone says, our stories are at the heart of human connection. So just now I felt from some of you, I was able to share my own experiences from one of my many now treks to Blacksburg. Stories are also at the heart of our healing. So this is a lot of the work that I get to do. And this morning I'd like to focus on some stories that we share, and so specifically stories about our family. Curious if anyone knows where that hymn that we just sang, 1003, comes from. Yes, I see hands. So I understand too, sort of some of the restrictions of wanting folks on Zoom. I see some hands raised, and I didn't know this until this summer, but Paul Gauguin and his painting. Has anyone seen the painting in real life? It's up in Boston. So I will share a little more about that in a moment, but it's the title of his painting, so where do we come from, what are we, where are we going? And I'm going to read a description. This is from UUA's song information page. The painting is aptly described. There are three groups of women, and if you read the painting from right to left, they represent the three questions. So you have the women with the child representing the beginning of life, where do we come from? There's a middle group representing the daily existence of adulthood, what are we? And then there is an older woman facing death who is asking, where are we going? Gauguin painted this piece in the late 1800s. It currently can be found in the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. On her blog, farfringe.com, Reverend Kimberly Davis observes that this is one of our smallest hymns. So if we had the actual print in front of us, it takes up half a page. But it is one of our biggest hymns in terms of its meaning and the musings that it invokes. I was recently asked to complete an exercise based on this hymn. I'm going to say this lightly. I was in a worship class this summer. I always say, when you make that sort of confession in front of a group, then there's this expectation, what'd you learn? Show us. But my instructor, Dr. Glenn Thomas, right out, he switched the words a little bit. So it was, he replaced the we with you. Where do you come from? What are you? Where are you going? And then he put a twist to it. He said, answer it within 50 words or less. Or no, it was exactly 50 words. And having that word restriction, I heard Jennifer call the hymn a game. Or, you know, let's play around with it. And that's what it became. It became a game of sorts. How can I get this answer to 50 words? And it was very poignant. At the time, I was listening to a podcast where the host would actually go down onto beaches or into nature and record. And so that's what I did for the exercise. I went to a creek nearby, and by that point, I knew the words by heart, and it almost became an embodied exercise. So I would invite anyone who is interested to try their hand at answering these three questions. Or, as the original questions show up by Gauguin, what would it look like if you drew those pictures? So questions can be powerful vehicles into our stories. According to Rabbi Firestone, simply asking questions is a statement of personal agency. And questions can take on the form of poetry, question poetry like Neruda's. So in our Time for All Ages today, the questions from his book turn into an epic poem, and it invites readers into self-reflection and deeper meaning. And before you can even answer a question, another one is posed. Questions allow for us to pause, to shift our view, to make space for the unexpected, and perhaps the greater truth. So here's two questions I've thought about a lot recently. How do I honor loved ones who are no longer with me? And how does their story fit into mine? So the person who comes up for me there is my grandfather, my dad's dad. He fought in World War II, spent 32 months in the South Pacific. And I don't know a lot about it. He didn't talk much about it. But I have a book of his letters to my grandmother. And some of it is just day to day. We had rifle training. The mud is a foot deep. There are a few emotional parts. He didn't share his feelings very easily. But one line sticks with me. He talks about what will it be like when I come home. And he talks about just standing there. I can almost picture him at the entryway of the house they lived in for over 50 years, just standing there with tears of joy streaming down. At the time, my dad was around 2. I don't think he had met him. He was at home on leave in 1945, so he didn't go back on active duty. Yet I'd like to think the way I now understand it, so going back to that second question, how does his story fit into mine? He didn't come back wounded physically, but like many of us who go through things, he came back with probably some pretty deep emotional wounds. And often when this happens to us, we sometimes will turn to something, we'll numb out. Maybe it's a substance, maybe our emotions get hidden behind other things, other volatile emotions. And so when I was a child, and how I now have come to understand this story, he had stopped drinking a few years prior to that. I do remember, though, being slightly fearful of my grandfather. And we used to go visit him in the summers. And at this time, he was nearing retirement, but working at a local auto shop. And he would come home, if you can kind of picture, with grease and oil covered in his work clothes. And I wouldn't go up and hug him, but I don't know that it was because of the dirty work gear. There was some sort of invisible wall. And as a child, I remember just always pondering or thinking about that. He softened as he grew older. And so I remember, come my college graduation, just a very different person. And I was often envious of my younger cousins who got to see this gentler version of my grandfather. So there's a word I think about, and the reason I share this story with you is integration. So this idea of bringing up our past experiences and bringing them into a cohesive narrative about our life. And we can integrate many things. We can integrate stories from our childhood, like I just did. We can think about challenges we've experienced, or even trauma that we've experienced as well. A couple of years ago, I did a deep dive into generational stories, and I started to read any book I could find about what it might have been like when my family came over in the 1860s. Part of my motivation in doing so, well, it was a school assignment, full disclosure, but it was to help me figure out what makes me tick and see what patterns I might be repeating from past generations. The subtitle of Rabbi Firestone's book, Wounds into Wisdom, is Healing Intergenerational Jewish Trauma. And yet, despite her focus on the Jewish culture, her work has universal applications. I'd like to read from the jacket cover. It says, our past does not simply disappear. The painful history of our ancestors and their rich cultural wisdom intertwine within us to create the patterns of our future. Even when past trauma remains unspoken or has been long forgotten, it becomes part of us and our children, a legacy of both strength and woundedness that shapes our lives. Indeed, Rabbi Firestone recounts how she and her five siblings each ultimately reenacted the volatile climate of their parents' home. Secrets, stuffed feelings, the choices that may have felt like the best way to show up at the time, but that kept emerging in the generations that follow in unexpected places. For me, I saw my own pattern of not really feeling emotions growing up reflected the model I grew up with. You may have heard some of that in the story I shared. I can only tamp those down so long. I remember waiting for my ride, getting on to, going back to college, and there was a Neruda question about the volcano. I was like that volcano, and I would wait until the last possible moment. Oh, my ride's here. Gotta go. But I now see what that is. It was a pattern of me just repeating, you know, some things I had grown up with. I want to pause for a moment, and this, what I am offering is challenging. It's challenging work for us to do. And I am not an expert by any means on what I've come to know as integration work. And there are many ways of going about it. One thing I did want to name, though, is that during my own search, I have found it so helpful not to do it alone. It's imperative that we surround ourselves with support. And this can be our church community, the small groups that many of us have participated in, support groups, professional counselors, anyone who can provide that safe container for the work of integrating our past. I like to think of this container, and I'm going into a container this week, right, with Susie, and even within that particular container, there's sub-containers of, you know, I've worked with teens on a worship service at Susie before, and that in itself, you know, container allows us to name that this is important work, and it also gives us the boundaries to do that work within. And it is important work. It allows us to enter into the other work we do as more whole individuals. So I like to think that any time I show up for social justice work, for example, I can come in as a more grounded person if I come to terms and integrate my own family story. Rabbi Firestone mentions two elements that come together, making the telling of our story possible, and that's a safe witness and the ripeness of time. And I'll just briefly cover those and then want to take you through another exercise that I've also been working on. So a safe witness is someone who can hold our words without reactivity, judgment, or advice giving. So in my experience, it's been someone who can actively listen with compassion and not offer solutions. For me, in my own experience, this is the type of sharing I've seen in the Soul Matters groups that I've been part of. And that was a great example and some great work. The process also takes time. I recall when I first started doing this, I didn't want to speak, share. I just soaked up and listened to others. And as time went on, and I was able to process more, I was able to share. And it was through both sharing and listening that I was able to do that. One of the things that shows up in this too, and I've heard, I think this is an actual term, is the inner witness. So we become more attuned to our feelings and what we've experienced. For me, one tool that's really helped with that is journal writing. I don't think this was shared in my introduction, but my 18-month-old who started with me at SUSE is now bridging into young adult from the teen group this year. So much of my focus is on that, but I noticed she's hopefully checking out right now from where we stayed last night. But in our front seat where she has made her space, there's a journal. That warmed my heart when I saw that. I'm gonna shift though, and speaking of journal writing, to another song. This is a country song, if you will, called Step Inside This House. Is anyone familiar with it? I don't think so, no. It is sung by Lyle Lovett. It was written by Guy Clark. And last fall, I participated in an exercise based on this song. So if you can picture the song, it's Lovett is taking someone on a tour of a house, and it can be a real house or an imaginary house, and showing the people, places, things, rituals that are important to that person. In my current job, I've been facilitating some ally circles as part of my company's inclusion and diversity programming. And I work for a software-based company, so we are very big in agile. So this was part of an agile experiment. We created the story exchange container, invited our colleagues to come join us, and we surveyed them both at the beginning and the end. And our assumption, our hypothesis was people feel more connected when they share stories. And from the surveys, we found that to be true. They shared that they felt more connected through sharing personal stories with one another. The exercise was originally constructed by a nonprofit group called Essential Partners. They do a lot of work with communities, and basically, it mirrors the lyrics, which is so interesting to me. We just talked about this hymn, 1003, that does, you know, I was invited to do the same thing. There's a line, for example, in the song that says, that picture hanging on the wall was painted by a friend. Now it doesn't look like much, I guess, but it's all I have of him. So what we did was we invited participants to just journal and write, you know, just free writing, what is important to you. We had three columns, you know, the beings that were important to you, people, pets, any rituals that you might have experienced, and then objects that might be in that house. And we informed them that the house could be a real house, or it could be imaginary, it could be a place they've lived in previously. And we whittled down, so we had the three columns, pick one thing from each column, and then we finally got down to that one thing. And we then broke people into groups of two, and those two people got to participate, engage in active listening, and receiving the stories of each other. I had a very touching experience in one of the recent ones that I had done. We do this about every month now, and unbeknownst to my partner and myself, we both picked our grandfathers. The The ritual and the tradition that I picked was a trip to the beach. It was my grandparents who had taken me when I was first six, and I recounted to my partner, remembering how big the waves were and being fearful about grabbing a shell that was about to be washed back into the sea. My partner didn't have her video on. And we always make this as safe as possible, and you know, letting people say, you know, love to see your faces and understand if not. I couldn't see her face, and yet I could hear in her voice the sadness, and she shared with me, she said, I didn't expect to cry. But she also shared that her grandfather was the person she had thought about, and it was because he had raised her when her mother, who was a single parent, you had to go to work. How grateful I was to be able to be a safe person to what was, prior to that meeting, a complete stranger, somebody I had never met within my company. Also grateful that we connected on our respective memories. And again, I mentioned Soul Matters, but there's so many different places within our church communities that we can do so and continue to do so. So my hope is that if each of us is able to look deeply into our own stories, that we may all move to a place of greater healing, and that we are able to show up to do our meaningful work from a place of even more wholeness and authenticity. So may it be so. Blessed be. Amen.